Psalm chapter 1, verses 1 through 6. Happy are those who do not follow the advice of the wicked, or take the path that sinners tread, or sit in the seat of scoffers. But their delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law they meditate day and night. They are like trees planted by streams of water, which yield fruit in its season, and their leaves do not wither. In all they do, they prosper. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Confession. If I'm honest, the psalm with its idyllic imagery of meditating on the law of the Lord and trees next to streams of water seems to me less real life and more idealistic. Meditate day and night? Who has time for that? Just to continue in my confession, I don't remember when, but I'm pretty sure I've preached or written some devotional on this psalm before. And I probably perpetuated an idealistic image that we were to strive for. Today, however, it's hard for me to think that I can keep up with the stark either-or of the good way versus the wicked way in our passage. Probably because more often than not, it seems that I don't have the time, the will, nor the resources to live in this idyllic way. Most of the time, it feels like I'm somewhere in between, and really, it doesn't feel generous, and it doesn't seem approachable, and it can feel naive to our current realities. So it makes me wonder if we need to look at the psalm again, not because I want to figure out some way to get out of a life of devotion and faithfulness, but precisely because we need a way to do exactly that. And it doesn't seem this passage has a way, at least on the surface, for us to approach that life of devotion and faithfulness. Of course, it could also be our own church baggage around our Pharisaical need to draw lines around right and wrong, in and out, sheep and goat, grain and chaff. But this morning, I want to reconsider or reframe three themes in our passage, and maybe get us closer to re-engaging this text as good news for us today. The first thing I want to reframe is this idea of happy and law. To our ears, happiness is often defined by our experience of heartwarming gladness. I'm so happy to see you, things like that. At least in the context of our passage this morning, the ancient people didn't seem to have understood it this way. They understood it differently. The word happy can be translated blessed, but the word also derives from the Hebrew word ashar, which means to go straight, to go on, and to advance. Embedded in the idea of happiness and blessedness is the idea of movement, of growth, and journey, in other words. And this dynamic sense of happiness was defined in relation to following the law of the Lord. Remember, their delight or happiness is in the law of the Lord. Torah, which is the Hebrew word translated law in our passage, may also be translated as instruction. And I think this is maybe a better translation because law seems so static. While embedded within the idea of instruction is a dynamic relationship, like as in teacher and student, for example. Bringing the idea of happiness as growth and advancement and the idea of law as instruction and relationship creates a sense of dynamic relationship between happiness and law, wherein the emphasis is not on fulfilling a list of requirements or rules, but about developing, growing, and journeying with the instructor, i.e. God. The way we've been brought up to think about happiness and blessedness is in accomplishment rather than being on the journey. And we've also been brought up to understand the law as less dynamic, but more static, as rule fulfillment and rule compliance. However, what I understand about the relationship between God and us in these first few verses of Psalm 1 is dynamic and relational. The happiness and blessedness comes as a result of being on journey in this dynamic relationship between God and people. And that's good news, for we are released from the shackles of static law, for an understanding that we are blessed because we are on journey with God. I wonder what it would look like and how it would change the character of our community if we celebrated and called someone blessed, not because they've somehow made it, but because they are on the journey. The second thing that I want to reframe for us and want to explore is this idea of meditation day and night. The part that got me experiencing this passage as not generous and impossible and naive was this very idea of meditating on the law day and night. Who has time for that? Most of the time, I feel like I'm just trying to make it. And the idea and ideal of a person spending their days in meditation on God's law seems so out of reach. And it may seem out of touch, since we know that very few have the luxury to spend their days and nights on meditation. But common to Christians' approach to this passage is to read it with this as the emphasis, to set up expectation for this kind of practice in our faith. Theologian and biblical scholar Yolanda Norton says that this would presume that the author's audience had someone else tending to their basic needs for survival. And such readings create a classism around the text and around God. Very few people in the ancient world or today have the luxury of sitting in solitude with the Torah all day. In other words, she dismantles a reading of the passage and others like it that prop up an ideal that creates a sort of Christian caste system wherein those who can live in luxury can be closer to God. We know how this kind of thinking and spirituality has played out in our faith communities and in our faith history. Norton is helpful in that she wants to reframe this idea of meditation. The Hebrew word for meditation, haggah, means to moan, growl, utter, speak, muse, and to add a word we focused on during Advent, to ponder. Here too, there is a sense of dynamism rather than stoic, static, and otherwise silent meditation. Norton goes on to say, rather than passive reception of God's word, our call is to act meaningfully and intentionally towards God's guidance. In other words, to meditate then is to struggle and to engage meaningfully with God's word so that we individually and collectively can live out and witness to God's presence in our world. Meditation is less static, stoic, and silent, but dynamic and wrestling to live out our faith, so that our faith, our service to our community is our meditation. Our conversation with our neighbors is our meditation. Our care for the marginalized is our meditation. This is what we do day in and out in our becoming a community that God is creating and calling forth. This is the kind of meditation that this psalm is calling forth in us day and night. The third thing that I want to reframe is this idea of wickedness. Now, wicked is a harsh word to my ears. It actually sounds harsh. But it's harsh to my ears, especially as I said earlier, because I've often felt like I cannot meet the ideal that I have previously read into this passage. Even still, what does our passage really have to say about wickedness? If you take another look at the passage, what's interesting in the context of this passage is that a direct correlation of wickedness to specific acts that we might think of as wicked is absent. Moreover, wickedness does not stand in contrast to goodness in our passage. Interesting. So, what does our passage say? Well, there are several images that are used in verses 4 and 5 to describe the wicked. The first one is chaff, the outer husk that separates from the grain, which is blown away by the wind. The second image is this idea of the wicked not standing in judgment. And the third is the wicked not sitting up or standing among the congregation of the righteous. In the case of the chaff, it seems that the wicked, the idea is that the wicked lack substance. As chaff is missing the grain, it no longer carries possibility to sustain as food or to grow as seed. And to not stand in judgment means that the wicked lack accountability. And to lack accountability, in turn, means that you lack community. And so do not sit among the congregation of the righteous, as it were. Here the psalmist defines wickedness less as acts and behaviors that are not good, and more as absence from that which is good, the substance that leads to life and community. And because of this, the wicked perish not as punishment, but as result of emptiness of substance and community. Now, I don't know about you, but this reconception and reframing is helpful in at least two ways. First, it re-emphasizes that what God is most concerned about is not compliance to static laws and rules, but about substance and support in community that leads to life and thriving. Second, it changes the way that we might view others whom we or society deem wicked. It reorients our suspicion into compassion. Can I look at the wicked as less evil and more needing of my understanding and compassion? Can I celebrate someone's journey with God and invite them to sit in the congregation, as it were? Can we be the welcoming congregation of the righteous for the marginalized, not because we have it together, but because we are on the journey to create community together? I think those are some important questions for us as we think about character in ourselves and in our community. I really do think, in spite of my earlier confession, that this ancient psalm has a word for us today. The faith that God is calling forth in our community is dynamic and substantial, and perishing comes as a result of stagnation and lack of substance. So we do need to be like the trees planted next to streams of water, whose source is Jesus, the fountain of life. And there we find thriving and life. We would do well to reframe our spirituality and faith towards getting on journey and less on compliance to static rules and laws. It was for freedom that Christ has set us free. Now, we may not be there yet, but in due time, in season, when we are on journey with God, we will bear fruit. And this is good news. Thanks, friends.